Everybody, it is so good to be back, and I hope that you have been having a nice summer, even if it has been raining as much for you as it does seem to have been around here in Finchley. I am Rabbi Miriam Berger, and it is wonderful as ever to be joined by my gorgeous colleagues, Rabbi Debbie Young Summers and Rabbi Robin Ashworth Steen. I just want to catch up, see how the summer was. I have to tell you that after our RSY Netzer camps special, Ben put them to the test and had an absolutely fabulous time. So it feels definitely like we should all be starting today singing the circle game and going round and round and round. It was just the most wonderful thing, dropping him off at camp, and even more special, picking him up again and seeing a whole load of parents who had themselves been getting on that coach years before, picking up their kids from their own camp experience. How are you? What have I missed in your lives?
So we're doing lots of day camps here and waiting till Sunday for our break. We're going off camping in Devon on Sunday and hoping the weather is kind. I'm very ready for a holiday, but also conscious that I'm going away just before Rosh Hashanah and I'm in total meltdown because there's so much to get ready and do. And am I actually going to end up working on the holiday? But that is the nature of a year that falls as early almost as can be.
Debbie, it feels like we need to have another catch up when we're not being listened to find out where in Devon you're going to be. We're also going to Devon, having planned beautifully to go at the beginning of the summer so that this clash into the High Holy Days wouldn't happen. Isolation meant it got delayed, and we're going also this weekend. So maybe we'll bump into you on the
Excellent.
Coast.
I'm particularly excited about a honey farm that we're going to.
Oh, that will good Rosh Hashanah preparation.
Exactly.
How are you, Robin?
I'm good. I've just been on holiday and I'm excited about this episode because we did a lot of reconnection to music that we love. So it was like 2 weeks of traveling around the UK and listening to music, and now firmly back in the tunnel and the stress of High Holy Day prep. So I feel far away from holiday, but do feel refreshed from it.
That sounds good, to be going in a little refreshed, even if it is all getting rather scary at this point. But I think we would all want to be described as funny, sophisticated, moving, clever, and unexpected, which is how our guest today has been described recently after one of his amazing shows. And although this is the first time that he has actually joined us in person in one of our podcasts, you do hear his music every time we begin and end, because we are welcoming today our brilliant creator of the Rabbiting On theme tune. It is Daniel Kaner. So let's say hello to you, Daniel. Nice to see you.
the Rabbiting On theme tune, and though I say it myself, I think it turned out rather well, didn't it, actually? But the thing is, you never know, and with this process, you never really know what you're going to get until you get it. And I had no idea it would turn out like that. I don't suppose you did either. So
definitely anyway, an earworm.
I'm glad you're pleased with it. So that's great.
Definitely is catchy and everything we could have hoped for. But that does seem to be your speciality in terms of being able to take just a nugget of music that stays in one's mind, but manages to also tell an incredible story. I think it's really important not just to describe you as a musician, but as a comedian and a storyteller. And you manage to make people cry and laugh all at the same time. How would you describe what you do?
That sounds good to me. And whatever the other intro was, you know. I was going to play you in with a little something, an example of something that I do. So let's do that, and then we can talk about why I should or shouldn't be here. My father's 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 father before him came from Russia, maybe Poland, maybe Lvov or Lublin. My mother's 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 mother before her from Vilna, Lithuania, near the Polish border. I come from them, they came from there to another country on a journey to God knows where. I'm the fourth generation since my not so distant relations left the villages and ghettos for another land. The Star of David, the menorah, the Talmud and the Torah. Behold the diaspora from the motherland. On the trains and the boats, there they are, packed together like Roma herrings in a jar. We live and learn, we laugh and cry. One day we're born, one day we die. We come from here, we go to there, and we're all on a journey to God knows where. Aren't we all on a journey to God knows where?
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
That actually, it gives me goosebumps listening to that. And I've heard it before, but it's so moving, that that sense of our own story, whoever we are really. It's, it tells so many of our stories. But personally, at the moment, hearing that, there's just so many images of refugees right now in the world.
It's not just the Jewish story, it's the immigrant story. I mean, obviously there's a specific reference to, you know, some traditional bits of, you know, Jewish bric-a-brac in there, but, you know, essentially that movement, that feeling, the displacement, the sense of wandering, belonging, and all those things, is not unique to the Jewish experience, clearly.
Yeah.
But it's also so Jewish in terms of it's the Amidah, or it's the Torah service, right? It's the way that we engage with being able to say, who are we today? We're who we are today by looking back at the generations who were past, whether we frame that as our avot at the beginning of the Amidah, or whether we frame it as a, as the call in Torah, that you should kind of look at the world and react to the world through our own experiences. That piece of storytelling that helps us to understand how we view the world through where we've come from.
There's also sort of in there, I mean, and this is, I suppose, you know, you've asked me to come and it's funny because in the Rabbiting On theme tune, there's a line which is, don't always play it actually, because sometimes there's an edited version, but there's a line which is three rabbis and maybe a guest doing what the rabbis do best. But the, you know, I never expected three rabbis and me being the guest. So, but I think that I'm the guest today in order to talk a little bit about the sort of role of music and the power of music, or at least how I see it. I mean, I'm only an expert in my very own tiny narrow field, but what's going on with that also is a some. So you've got your words, you've got the poetry, and the poetry is an emotion that's found a thought that's found words. And you've got, it's Robert Frost, I think, that. And then you've got this another narrative going underneath it, which is the music itself, and then the combination of the two. And of course, it's more than the sum of its parts. But specifically in that piece, you've got a very Hamisher kind of a sound to it, you know, which evokes in itself all that history and all the wandering Jews, you know, from the right from the beginning, from the wilderness to the present day. So you've got all that going on, as well as the specific storytelling that's happening in the words. And that's how music and song, I suppose, has a sort of unique ability, because together it can tell lots of stories all at the same time. And it's also about evoking feeling, is essentially, you know, how do you, it's triggering is what it is, in a good way. I mean, you know, we hope. And can also be in a not so good way. But the nature of it is what I hope I can achieve is somebody to feel something. And excuse me if I'm rabbiting on, but the other, you know, when you get to the liturgy and you get to some of the prayers and you get to the Psalms and you get somebody somewhere felt something enormously powerful and were able to basically write it down or succinctly or capture that huge feeling in and express it in a small number of words. And for some reason, mystery to all of us, you know, these have sustained. We still have them and we still use them. And some of them are better than others, but they're all trying to achieve the same thing. And then you put them in a sequence. So everything's storytelling, so you put them in a sequence so that, again, singly they have a power, and then together in the storytelling they have even more power.
This is a really interesting time of year to be thinking about that power of music, because I think for so many Jews, our connection to the music of the High Holy Days and that visceral feeling you get when you start to hear those tunes, it does something in your kishkas. And, you know, what for you has been the driving force between the kind of music you write? Do you write liturgical music? Have you wanted to, or is it always telling your story?
Well, I do lots of different kinds of writing. So that's, from theme tunes to the sort of more comedic storytelling, which I'll do in the theatre. But also mostly in between those, and the smaller ones are about those moments of feeling. And actually they are about effectively my relationship with something bigger than me. What do we want to call it? You know, and in fact, more recently, as I have become more connected with a Jewish world that I hadn't really had anything to do with for most of my life, there was a point when I started this where I hadn't been in a shul since I was a child, or since my bar mitzvah, really. That was it. Bar mitzvah, off I went. And it was a kind of relatively orthodox upbringing that I had. And so it was terrifying, the idea of being sort of... even just going into one. Now I've been in and out of them, well, pre-pandemic, I should say. I was in and out of them all the time, and doing bits of my music which have been chosen to be appropriate in services. So fitting into the liturgy, and then I have done, so far I've done one, which Miriam knows a little about. But I'm waiting for the more commissions to land on my desk.
Great. Well, hopefully
we'll
have
our very
follow.
Own Kihine Kahome that Daniel wrote for us. So that's why I'm smiling, like I know that he's written at least one amazing liturgical piece for this time of year.
That's great.
I think that might be a good sort of segue into talking about the way the sort of retranslation of stuff that is in the liturgy, and how, there's a kind of, there's so many different ways of, one of the problems is that as soon as you start having English translation, you are sort of, in some ways, displacing yourself somewhat. In other words, if you're singing in Hebrew, perhaps you don't even really know what it means, but you are more wrapped up in the feeling of it. And as soon as you introduce some meaning, and as soon as you introduce words that we recognise, then that is, again, providing a different narrative. And so it's a very sort of precarious balance there to get the words right. Some of them seem to me not quite right sometimes. I mean, but then I'm learning about this all the time, and sometimes my reaction is, oh, no, that doesn't feel... I can't identify with that, and I'd rather not know what it was that I was singing along to. So in a way, I feel like I've sort of, if I have a job to do as well in this area, it's to try and get that encapsulated effectively and in a poetic way that pleases me. So my relationship, which goes back to sort of Debbie's question with it, with the, it's really... before I start writing anything, it begins with a prayer. It's a corny old prayer, but it is what do you want me to write? And it might come out as a comedy song, or it might come out as a sort of expression of whatever particular, usually neurosis, I'm experiencing in the moment. But then trying to get that and make it very personal and very universal at the same time. So I've got this piece that is the sort of showstopper in the shows, you know, which is about a drug taking rabbi, for example. And in fact, and sometimes rather embarrassingly, I've had, you know, at Limoud, for example, some of the kids are singing along to this, and it's sort of like
not about any of us, is it?
It is about a real rabbi. I read it in the Jewish Chronicles, so it must be true. And but it's become a little bit of a hit, if you like, a minor hit in that world. But, you know, I didn't know that I was going to write it. I didn't know how it would come out. I didn't know what would be the content. And actually, I think it's actually quite a serious song, even though it's comedic. But then that will bring you back to, oh, you know, the voice is the voices. You know, the same voice will tell you to do something good and to do something brilliant and everybody loves it, and the same voice will tell you to make something and it's actually not that good, but you thought it was because they were telling you, you know. So trying to be in that zone, the relationship between me and the muse, and I'd really like to call it a mission. and it sounds a bit pompous, but when I feel connected, both above and below, something comes out and comes through. You know, that's really what it is, and it's as miraculous to me as it is sometimes when people hear it. You know, that's all.
I think I find that really fascinating, because I find it really resonates in my role as a rabbi. Rabbi Lawrence Hoffman talks about rabbis as being artists, and often I, before I really do service, will say a prayer very similar, which is Hineni, here I am. And it's that, what I heard in what you were saying, which is what I experience as well, when I want to create a space where people can connect to something greater than ourselves or to a deeper part of them, is a kind of surrender to the process, that you can't control it, and what will come, and it will resonate in ways that it will. And what I also loved about what you were saying is, particularly in the liturgy, and I think because we're all High Holy Day focused, there is such a tension and discomfort in our liturgy. And, you know, we can hide from it, as you say, if we're singing the Hebrew or reading the Hebrew when we sing in English. But there is a real discomfort and tension within our liturgy. And actually, I see that in your work as well, you know, with the Bad Rabbi. I loved that. I kind of read the lyrics as a poem and then listened to it. And it's something, you know, you're telling a story of discomfort, of abuse of power, something I feel really passionately about, because rabbis hold such a position and it's so easy to abuse that because we're gifted so much in it. But yet the framing of it, and even the song you just did at the beginning, the Hamishah feel, but the sorrow that is also encapsulated. And I think as rabbis, we always try and craft spaces where people feel held, but able to challenge themselves. So thank you, because it's given me a lot to think about in that regard.
I had a bar mitzvah child a few years ago, whose mum convinced us, sort of, you know, he's wonderful at playing violin, he should play something during the Friday night service. And I did that, like, oh gosh, you know, really? Assumed this is, you know, another pushy Jewish mother trying to kind of, you know, show her son's talents. But grudgingly, and I have admitted to her subsequently that it was grudgingly agreed that yes, he should play something during the Friday night service. And he played a song that we use often on a Friday night, played with a guitar. And all of a sudden, him playing it with the violin, I mean, he was extraordinary and an incredibly talented musician. And all of a sudden, sitting in this synagogue in Finchley, we were transported back to the shtetl. And it was the most incredible learning opportunity for me, not just that actually I should really explore the talents of my B'nai Mitzvah, but also that understanding of a different mode, a different way of experiencing even the same piece of music can transport us in space and in time and allow us to sort of open something up, open a different package in a different way. I was wondering, just as we're starting to reach the end of our time together, if you had a piece, Daniel, that you wanted to share with us, just like a snippet that would show us a little bit about kind of those different modes. Have you got anything that sort of, this feels deeply Jewish, or anything that says, you know, this is really universal, even if the language is very Jewish? Like, have you got any examples that might help us unpack your music in that way?
As High Holidays coming up, I thought maybe I would do a snippet of my song on Yom Kippur, which is one that I technically was booked to play in the States, but I can't go there, obviously, now. I get a gig once a year to play the song.
and now that's a second Yom Kippur that you've missed.
Yes, that's right. So I thought, although it is sung by a couple of other cantors, in fact, it was taught at Habanashira, funnily enough. So I know it's done, but I thought maybe I could do a little bit of that, because I don't know how. Have you got another one before? You have got another one before High
Holidays. We've got our High Holy Days behind the scenes coming up in 2 weeks.
Well, let's
go on. Give us a sneak preview of the High Holy Days.
In fact, that's right.
This could be a chance to start the Yom Kippur hits that are as big as the Christmas hits.
On Yom Kippur, I'll say the prayers in English or in Hebrew. I'm sorry for my trespasses, for what I've done and what I did not do. I may not be religious, it may all be hot air, but if I'm sincere for at least one day of the year, maybe I'll find God there. On Yom Kippur, I'll hold my fast, I'll try to be still and patient. I'm a grain of sand, I'm a blade of grass, I'm a spark in the arc of creation. And let my mind be silent, let me feel something pure and rare. Let my anguish cease, let me make my peace. Maybe I'll find God there. Maybe I'll find God there. Maybe I'll find God there. Maybe I'll find God there.
Shukach.
That's an edited, shortened version for the purpose of the podcast. It's a bit like Desert Island Disc when they, you know, when you hear the playback and they say you can only hear a shorter snippet of the song. anyway, that's on Yom Kippur.
It's really haunting, and it has the mode of Yom Kippur, which is really interesting. As Miriam was saying, that layering of bringing you into a space, but it obviously being new. It's really beautiful. Thank you. It's in this time of Elul, it's good to have moments where you can connect and feel what you're about to step into. Yeah.
I think the role that music plays in doing that is always really crucial, yeah, for me anyway, you know, that I'm not at the High Holy Days until I'm hearing those lilts and tunes, and it's so powerful. Daniel, for joining us today. And just a nod to all of our listeners. We've been hearing lots from you over the last few weeks with some brilliant suggestions for topics that you'd like to have covered in future episodes. So our production team are busy scheduling those. So keep on getting in touch with us if there's something that you'd really like us to talk about.
Thank you to you, Daniel. It's been wonderful being able to talk to you, to hear your music, to connect other people into your music as well, and to meet the creator of the Rabbiting On theme tune, which, you know, clearly your greatest accolade to date.
It's my finest work.
Yeah. Absolutely. So listeners, please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. Use the email address media@rjuk.org or on Twitter @ReformMovement. We look forward to hearing from you all and showing you behind the scenes at the High Holy Days in our next podcast in a couple of weeks. I hope your reflections during Elul go well, and keep calm, keep enjoying the summer. Debbie, let's hang on to Elul for as long as possible.
To see you.
Yeah, it was a great way to start the morning, and with music as well. It's really great. And I've seen you, Daniel, doing your thing, but I've never met you, so it's nice to meet you properly.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you. Incidentally, I have been enjoying the Rabbiting On podcast, even the ones with me not in it.
Even those, wow.
Even those, yeah. So it's been nice to kind of get to know you all a little bit through that as well, which is
great.
You know.
Yeah, well, my husband doesn't listen to the podcast, but he does sing the jingle. So
that's the way we like it.
Yeah, there you go. That's support.
If you enjoyed what you heard, well, you know, do visit my website, www.danielcaner.com. And if you want to buy tickets for Radlett, which would be great, then please do go to the Radlett Centre website. Or there is also a link to it on my own. It's on September the 1st at 7:30. And a splendid time is guaranteed for all, as the Beatles used to say.
Thank you for joining us, Daniel. Always wonderful to see you, and lovely to be with Debbie and Robin. And hope everybody has a good end of August, and look forward to seeing you into the month of Tishri.
Bye. Bye.